The following podcast is for people who grew up in the 90s. Wherever you are right now, you're about to be transported back in time. And get ready for a nostalgia-filled trip down memory lane with the 90s Today podcast, where we talk about the 90s today. And by the way, do you love orange sodas? Because we do.
And here it goes
with your hosts, Brandon and James.
Hey, you wild and crazy 90s kids, you're listening to the Nostalgia Mothership, known only as the 90s Today Podcast. I am your host, Brandon, and here's my co-host, James, that eats cheese in the shape of states. Here's Florida.
And joining us with us again is our special guest, Chris.
Hey, back again. I must be doing okay.
And today we're going to be talking about Jurassic Park and why. It's because it was the winner of the March Madness tournament.
Yes. So,
yes. How have you been?
Been pretty good, I suppose. I have had so far the entire week off from work, so no longer the male escort this week. Just decided to treat myself off to some time off because I have plenty of time built up because I never ask off from work, so... Here we are, living the good life.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Nothing's different.
Nothing's really different. That's not bad. Chris, what about yourself?
Well, I have not had this week off of work, but it's not bad, though. It's been okay.
Have you had the sub any kindergarten classes at all?
No, but I do have first grade.
Ooh.
So close enough. So. But a student teacher was in there that taught everything. I just had to pretty much sit there.
Nice.
So it was great.
I have been on both ends of that and... Still awful.
All right, so don't forget to rate our podcast if you're enjoying it. Go to your local podcasts and edit and like and give us 5 stars and leave us a review on the 90s Today podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, Google Podcasts is over with. It may be over with by now anyway.
April 2nd.
So James, you want to do the trivia?
Yeah, but first of all, did we have anybody answer last week's trivia question?
I would say no, since you're shaking your head no at me.
That's great. Nobody wanted to win this week's fabulous no prize shout out. But let's see if we can have somebody win one next week. Chris, I'll let you do the honors.
All right. This is seems pretty easy, but we'll see. What online retailer began in 1994 primarily as an online bookstore?
Ooh. If you think that you know the answer to this week's trivia question, be the first to give us the correct answer on our Facebook or Instagram post. And you could be the winner of a fabulous no prize shout out only on the 90s Today podcast.
One take, James strikes again.
He is back.
30 years ago today, James, this week.
Well, let's find out what it is. All right, Brandon, let's see. Our number one movie 30 years ago this week was, once again, D2. The Mighty Ducks, bringing in a box office total of $5,513,000. What about a TV 30 years ago this week, Brandon?
Home Improvement. It got 36.4 million likes on its program.
On likes?
Whoa, really? It was ahead of its time.
James, can you do the grunt?
Oh, yeah. 36.4 million.
Let's see. What do we got books there, Chris?
Looks like for fiction, we've got The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield.
You said that way better than I did last week. Very good. What about nonfiction?
Nonfiction,
Chris?
We've got Embraced by the Light by Betty J. Eddy.
There you go.
Again.
That's right. All right, we got new album this week. See that the number one album 30 years ago this week was Far Beyond Driven by Pantera. Sold 185,000 units. And Brandon, I'll let you read that. Aww, the single.
I knew you would. It's, the single is Bump and Grind by R. Kelly.
That's Brandon's favorite song, by the way.
Never.
So
heard
we're going to let you listen to 5 seconds of Bump and Grind by R. Kelly.
Take it away, James. Time for Mark Summers to count us down.
Really? You're going to lead it right into that?
Yeah, talk about that song.
All right, so Mark Summers, count us down for the 90s and 90.
On your mark. Get ready. get set, go!
Not much to report this week except for O.J. Simpson, the decorated football superstar and Hollywood actor who was acquitted of, well, we all remember, has passed away. His family took to X with an official statement. On April 10th, our father, Orenthal Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer. He was surrounded by his children and grandchildren. And during this time of transition, his family asks that you please respect their wishes for privacy and grace. Simpson passed away in Las Vegas. He was 76. Back to you, James. Thank you, me. And before we start talking about Jurassic Park, the winner of the 2024 90s Today March Madness Tournament, here's a little something for you.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Introducing Band-Aid brand antibiotic bandages with doctor-recommended antibiotic right on the pad for powerful protection against germs that can cause infection.
I am stuck on Band-Aid brand because germs don't stick on me.
Woo! New Band-Aid brand antibiotic bandages.
Hey, I'm the guy who makes 7-Up. I also write the advertising. I just came up with a great new slogan. Make 7-Up yours. Make 7-Up yours. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Make 7-Up yours, baby.
people just love it.
Make 7-Up yours!
Hey, my man, make 7-Up yours. Make 7-Up yours.
Same to you.
Same to me.
You see, it's catching on already.
Hey, make 7-Up yours, man.
Are you going to stick them up yours?
Oh, we going global with this, baby.
That's a great selection of commercials we just heard here on the 90s Today podcast, but now we're going to be talking about Jurassic Park. And why are we going to be talking about that? It's because it won the March Madness tournament that we done a week or 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, well deserved, I thought. Chris, you were part of that, the winning ceremonies there, and so was Nash. Nash is not here this evening.
I was not a part of that episode.
That's okay. You were here in spirit. Well, you kind of were. I mean,
you asked you me questions beforehand.
Yeah,
that's true.
You gave us your Sweet 16 picks there. So, no, you were here for that. But yeah, deservingly so. Jurassic Park, fantastic film, and we talked about why we thought Jurassic Park was the best movie of the 90s. Several weeks ago, but you know what? You're going to hear about it again this week, so get ready for another Jurassic Park filled episode. So I guess we can go ahead and start talking about, like, maybe, like, what do you remember the first time that you saw Jurassic Park, Brandon?
Just loving the fact that the CGI looked just so realistic. It felt like I was really watching dinosaurs walk on the Earth. Mm-hmm. And I was a big dinosaur fan. I was a kid. I was, 93? So I would have been 9 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to meet the kid who did not find dinosaurs fascinating. Like, you know, screw you.
Yeah, leave us a message on Instagram. Were you like dinosaurs?
Were you a lame child? Hit us up. But yeah, same here, Brandon. The practical and the computer effects. Of course, back then, you didn't know those words. You were just watching a movie.
Yeah, I didn't know.
It looked completely real. I mean, there's still been no other film like it that has looked as legit as it was. It
stands the test of time. It looks good today compared to our CGI today.
Yeah. And like we talked about before, I mean, you had big-ass dinosaurs on the screen. I mean, it was awesome.
I mean, you can't.
I was 24 years old, if I remember correctly, when that came out, and I saw it at opening week in the theater. I felt like a kid again, though. You know, it had a really big impact on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, one of my favorite aspects of it as well is that, you know, it's an action-adventure film. It's one that it's never been duplicated since. That might be my favorite genre of film, maybe. I don't
know. Action-adventure.
Yeah, I've probably seen more action adventure than I have sci-fi. And, of course, this is kind of borders along is it sci-fi? Is it action adventure?
Yeah. Kind of both, right?
Could it be horror in a way? Because I mean,
there definitely was some jump scares.
Is there some romance? Why not?
Sure.
I mean, life finds a way. You just
bunch without of the clever sexy girls in there,
yeah, just without the sexy saxophone music there.
And I think one of the endearing qualities about it, though, it's the reason it stood the test of time. It was a true event film.
Oh yes,
it's a true event movie. People were talking about it months before it came out, and this was really before the internet, mm-hmm. before the internet that we know today. So it was all word of mouth. You know, a lot of buzz beforehand, and then people that went to see it put it out there to everybody else. You got to see this movie, even if you're not really into sci-fi or anything. You got to see it because mm-hmm. it was a spectacle.
Do you guys remember the day that you actually saw the movie
opening? Yeah, with both of my parents.
Do you remember anything about that day leading up to it?
Not at all. But
I saw it an opening night. I did see it, I think, that weekend, though, if I remember correctly. I think on a Saturday after it opened. I just remember all the buzz around it. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, before really the internet, like we have today, the only way you really found out anything about it was, you know, probably from the magazines and things like that, which I'd seen some articles in the magazines months prior leading up to that, like may have even been like maybe Starlog or something like that I remember seeing about, you know. And of course, and then the buzz started and it kept building and building, so I was really anticipating and excited, and I wasn't let down at all.
You brought up a very interesting title of a magazine there, Starlog. I hadn't thought about Starlog in quite some time. Fangoria, I'm reminded of daily due to my Instagram posts that I see. But Starlog, wow, yeah. I remember going into the books section at Walmart and just checking out Starlog magazines and this Star Trek Insider magazines mm-hmm. as well while my parents shopped around while I had already picked out my G.I. Joe for the week and put it in the shopping cart.
That's, you know, those magazines, that's how we got our news back then mm-hmm. and sneak peeks at things coming up.
You know, it's like I kind of prefer it that way, but at the same time, there's a lot of stuff that they didn't report on that was part of the same genre as well that would just kind of sneak under the radar, you know. So,
that's true.
A lot of good and bad when it comes to that. And so going back to Fangoria, my God. Like, you know, Walmart didn't sell that. I had to go to Bookland to go check that thing out. And horrifying. Horrifying magazine.
Oh, I remember the ads for the custom masks. In there. Oh, it was great. I think I picked up a few, you know, 80s issues of that magazine quite a while back somewhere. At a horror convention. Mm. I think someone had some. It's just so much fun to go back and look at that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, we were all about wanting to see this movie, and we were already fans of dinosaurs or fascinated by dinosaurs. What were some of your earliest memories leading up to Jurassic Park? Like, what are your earliest memories of dinosaurs leading up to Jurassic Park? Not so much related to Jurassic Park, but like is that a question that makes sense at all that I'm trying to get across here, Chris?
It does. I think I remember being in fourth, maybe fifth grade, the elementary school I was going to at the time. And I remember checking out a book about dinosaurs at that time. And I'd already kind of been into dinosaurs, as all most young boys are, fascinated with them. I checked out the book and read it and learned a lot about them. And I got obsessed there for a little while with it.
I remember having some, it was like rubber dinosaur toys that I think every kid has had at one point. Just 5 inches long somewhere in there. It would come like a bucket maybe with like some plastic trees and maybe a volcano to put somewhere in there. I had some of those. But, you know, the 80s had several dinosaur-themed cartoons, three of which I remember well that came out several years before Jurassic Park, one being Dino Saucers. I don't remember much about it.
I vaguely remember that.
I know it came on the USA Network, but they were like dinosaurs from like space, and they wore like this crazy armor, and they would fight each other. There was also Denver the Last Dinosaur, which was like a
Denver,
a dinosaur that wore, you know, sunglasses and a Hawaiian shirt and hung out with like some teenagers, you know, just chilling out, you know, in Denver, you know, just, you know, whatever. And then probably my favorite, and I introduced Brandon to it last, or maybe last week or the week before last. He had never heard of it before. Dino Riders.
I was about the Dino Riders. Yeah. I was just thinking about that.
Oh, my God. And I was showing him some of the toys, some toy commercials from it. I mean, some, you know, you had two rival factions that end up time traveling back to the prehistoric days. And they end up putting armor and harnesses on the dinosaurs so you could harness the power of the dinosaurs or the Dino Riders, and they would battle each other. Incredible toys, incredible cartoon, incredible toy commercials if you want to find them on YouTube. Loved it. That was basically, you know, my introduction to dinosaurs. Brandon, what about you?
Learned about them in school. Yeah. And probably, I mean, I would say that I probably, you know, like school fair, not school fair, Scholastic book fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're getting a dinosaur book from there. Like, you've seen dinosaurs in cartoons you'd watch, you know, like Fred the Flintstones had dinosaurs in it, stuff like that. Okay. It put it in the zeitgeist for me. You know?
Yeah, and go back to, the CGI and the practical effects of these dinosaurs. Like, mostly, if you had ever seen dinosaurs on TV or a movie, it was always going to be done with stop-motion animation.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie was not stop-motion animation at all.
The old Ray Harryhausen movies in the 60s. And a good memory I have is watching Land of the Lost.
Land of the Lost.
In the 70s.
Yeah.
In the 70s. That was, I remember, one of the earliest memories I have of dinosaurs in pop culture, actually live action.
Hmm.
And looking at that, and, you know, about 15 years later, we had Jurassic Park, and it's just night and day.
I totally forgot about Land of the Lost. That wasn't a show that I really watched religiously as a kid. Of course, you know, it had already ran its time. But, you know, they did show repeats of it on, Sci-Fi Channel, maybe early in the morning?
I think so.
Back when the Sci-Fi Channel was cool.
It was Land Before Time, too, right?
There was Land Before Time. I never really, I don't think I've ever seen that movie, to be completely honest. So, yeah, everybody talks about Bigfoot's mom dying and getting all sad, and I'm like, I have no, my childhood was never destroyed by that moment. I don't believe so. But,
I think the first, childhood trauma from cartoons is either Bambi for me or Lion King.
Maybe Lion King for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I might have to think about that a little bit. What about you, real quick?
Mine was, of course, a little earlier back in late 70s. There was a movie that came out based on a novel called Watership Down. Oh, great, great movie. The book was really good too, really great. But it was hard to watch as a young kid.
Going back to rabbits, The Velveteen Rabbit.
The Velveteen Rabbit.
I remember seeing a version of that, and this kid loved this. This kid, what gets does he get the measles or the scarlet fever or something like that?
And they basically
torched the house to get rid of, like, because everything's germ infested. So they torched the house, and his beloved little Velveteen Rabbit's in the house as well. And it goes up in flames and everything. It's just like, oh, dang, this, I hate this so much.
Everybody had a favorite plush growing up. You had to have it with you. Somebody's coming to the door for you.
Goodness. Hold on just a second.
We'll be right back, kids. And we're back. So, James, you want to continue what you were talking about?
I don't even remember what I was talking about.
You're talking about the Velveteen Rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
How it emotionally scarred.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I covered that. All right.
Yeah, we were talking about everybody has a plush they grew up with. Yeah, there we were.
All right. Okay, let's go ahead and get back into Jurassic Park here.
I guess.
Some of our favorite moments from the movie. Brandon just loves the whole movie.
The kitchen scene. I like that. You know, where the kids are hiding from the velociraptors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely that. And then the big scene with the T-Rex. When the power goes out at the park and, you know, they see that the goat's gone. And that's big. And then the lights are out, so they have the flashlights, you know. I remember when the dinosaur came out and it looked in the window as one of the kids was shining a light in its eye. Right. I was like, whoa, that's the creepiest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
And just the close up of light, just like the cup rattling.
Oh, yeah.
The water. I mean, that's iconic.
I was reading today to get that effect, they were playing some music from Earth, Wind, and Fire to try to get that effect. So that's how we have that effect on a...
They weren't just stopping the ground or nothing?
Really?
I think so. I could be mistaken. I didn't read the full article.
That's true. That's cool.
Yeah. I have seen several articles that have mentioned Earth, Wind, and Fire in that scene. So I'm just trying to... Pretty sure that's the correlation. Like I said, I did not read the full article.
Did you ever stick a cup of water on your table and go... Boom! See the water shake when you were that age. Not now.
And I did, and here and at that moment, for a split second, I thought, "Am I a T-Rex too?"
And so, only bad things you'd have short hands.
then I looked in the mirror and I was like, "Oh wait, thank God."
Big appetite though.
Another scene I really love is when they were interacting with the Brontosaurus.
Mm.
It was just visually and everything about it. It just you could really see the realism. And that's a good example of a scene where you could just see the realism in the special effects and in the dinosaurs. Because, I mean, and you know...
Which Brontosaurus scene? When they first see them? Or when
I think when they first see them out there and everything.
I didn't know if you meant when Grant and Lex and Tim were stuck in the tree and he sneezes all over Legs. I didn't know if that's what.
Well, that's good too. But that first when they first encounter him, though, was really cool. And here we are 31 years later, and I mean it still holds up.
Yep.
And you can't really say that about a lot of special effects from that long ago.
Speaking of that and holding up, when Grant, Lex, and Tim are in the tree, and that dinosaur sneezes all over Lex, that is my least favorite CGI effect seen in the entire movie.
Really?
I think it's the one that is the least impressive for whatever reason. I could do without it. I'm just like, ugh, here it comes. Ugh.
Fast forward. I didn't think anything about it.
Well, you go back and you watch it and you'll be like, gross.
I mean, yeah, nowadays as a kid, I was just like...
Well, see, that
as a kid, I didn't notice it either.
You said, no, that's gross. Mom, take me out of here.
Take me out of here.
However, that shows how impressive it was and how realistic it was if it grossed you out that much. So, you know, you got to give it that.
I'm just like, ugh, this was like crap. Industrial Light and Magic, my ass. Hate it. What are some other favorite scenes, guys?
Well, can I go towards the end of the movies when we got that jump scare?
Spoiler alert!
Yeah, spoiler. You know, where they turn the power back on and the Velociraptor jumps up from the back.
Oh, yeah.
That got everybody.
I mean, I've mentioned it on Lord, there's no telling which podcast I've mentioned it on, but I took Nash and my ex-wife to go see it in 3D for its 20th anniversary.
And did they know that was coming up?
That's the thing. I think she had only seen it once when she was a kid, and Nash in pieces, so he'd never really, really seen it. And so I knew it was coming up. It's probably like the only jump scare in that movie. I think I really can't think of any other ones right now.
No,
but like a true jump scare.
I guess so. Yeah.
So yeah, that raptor head just sticks out of the electrical wiring there, and I was watching. Because like I said, we're watching it in 3D.
Yeah. It was IMAX or was it?
Just regular screen 3D, and I was waiting to get their reaction. Boy, they jumped! Oh, loved it so much. Probably, it's my favorite moment of that film, taking my brother to go see it, definitely.
I think anything with the Raptors, any scene with the Raptors was awesome. When they're loose in the lab and there and everything. Oh, yeah. That was some of my favorite stuff.
One of my favorites, and it's just because it's just a cool shot, is when Lex and Tim think that they're in the clear after they've been brought back by Grant. After, you know, spending an entire night being pursued by the T-Rex and other creepy crawlies in the Jurassic Park. And they're sitting there at the table just eating all that crap, all the ice cream. And then she's got the Jell-O and they're talking. Right. And her hand starts to shake. And then they add that sound effect, a slight Jell-O wiggle.
Yeah.
And then there's a painting of a Velociraptor on the wall. And then the actual silhouette of the raptor
kind
of goes right beside it. It's like, it's so cool,
that's
man.
That's awesome.
And that's why you have somebody like Steven Spielberg direct this movie. real quick about that. So there was so many people that other studios wanted to direct this movie. Before Universal got the rights, Richard Donner was somebody who was mentioned. Tim Burton was somebody who was mentioned, but eventually Universal got the rights to it back in like 90. Because when Crichton wrote this book, when it was published and released in 90, you know, people were like, "Oh, this is going to be a hit if we make this into a movie." So Universal finally got it. Well, Universal only wanted Spielberg to make this movie. They had nobody else in mind. It's Steven Spielberg or nobody else. Mm-hmm. So Steven Spielberg said, "Well, I'm really wanting to do this movie called Schindler's List. If you guys let me do Schindler's List, I'll do Jurassic Park for you." And they're like, "You got it." So what sucked about this as well was that Spielberg was in Poland directing Schindler's List, and Jurassic Park was filmed in Hawaii, I believe.
Was it Costa Rica?
Well, the movie takes place in Costa Rica.
Oh, Hawaii, okay.
But I think it was shot somewhere in Hawaii. I could be wrong. I mean, I know there's a whole bunch of JP fans out there that are nuts about this movie way more than I am.
The new ones were in New Zealand, wasn't it? Or Australia?
Couldn't tell you. Because of the new ones. I don't care.
I think it might be in New Zealand.
But anyway, New Zealand. So, you know, he couldn't fly both places, or nor could he be both places at once.
FaceTime. I'm just playing.
Yeah. Well, kind of.
Okay.
So, with the Polish government, he ended up renting out several satellites so he could be on, like, video conference with people, with the production crew simultaneously on the set of Jurassic Park. It costs, like, $1.6 million per week for these transmissions.
Wow.
Whereas now it's free. Yeah, just pull up your, you know, whatever computer. There you go.
It was a really good year for Stevie. He ended up winning his first Oscar, you know, for Schindler's List.
Yeah.
That and
absolutely. Anyway, iconic scenes here. I like the scene where Alan Grant basically scares the living hell out of that kid when they're digging up the Velociraptor bones. He's got the talon
right
basically
face.
Basically telling this kid, because kids like, they're just overgrown birds, and Alan Grant's like, "Well, listen here, you little turd." And he starts telling him how these raptors would slice him open and dismember him, and, you know, just making friends, you know. You know, father of the year kind of speeches, you know. Just thank God he wasn't a dad. But, good stuff. Any other iconic scenes?
No, just another thought, though. A lot of times I think about, like, ensemble casts of movies, how they make or break a movie. Overall, I mean, you had pretty good casting for that. They all came together pretty well. Sometimes I kind of like to think about how it would have been different if maybe even one actor or actress had been chosen instead of another, how it would have made a different movie. But it turned out, you know, Sam Neill's pretty solid in everything that he's in. It just, I think the casting had a lot to do with the impact of the movie.
Speaking of that casting, there was a whole bunch of casting things that I read before we recorded the episode. It was just too many to even want to write down. But one person who almost was cast as Alan Grant was Kurt Russell. And the only reason that he wasn't is that him and Spielberg couldn't agree on a salary. So it could have been Kurt Russell instead of Sam Neill, which would have been pretty darn cool.
I think that I would have enjoyed that too, I think. Oh yeah.
Yeah, if Jim Carrey was even like considered for, I think maybe Ian Malcolm at one point. There's like so many others. It's ridiculous. Who's who.
Now you couldn't imagine it without Ian Malcolm.
No, I could see him. But I mean, come on. You mean I don't see anybody else in that except Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
I mean, perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean. I can't think. What sucks is that I start thinking of Ian Malcolm, then my mind automatically goes to Lost World Jurassic Park, which I loathe. I cannot stand that movie. Anyway, that's a. That, I hope it's never a topic for another podcast.
How about the third movie? Alan.
I prefer the Lost World. I prefer Jurassic Park 3 over Lost World any given day of the week.
You know what I'm talking about, right? Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So another scene I was going to think about, you know, when the little kid, I think he's Tim, he was on the electric fence, and they were turning the power back on, and he was telling him to jump, and one, two, and then he got shocked, and he fell to the ground, and then when he woke up, he said three.
After Alan administers CPR, great scene, good humor there, absolute good humor.
And Dennis Nedry, man. He really messed it up for that part.
He mucked it up.
Yeah, taking the dino DNA.
Yep.
With him in that little shaving cream.
Barbasol,
yeah. You can buy that now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Have a little secret place for it. Yeah. But he got it in the end with that. I can't remember the dinosaur sprays poison.
Dilophosaurus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, I have a fun fact about the Dilophosaurus, if I may.
James's fun fact.
So, I mean, in that film, it's depicted as a very cute, small... dinosaur, all right. So, and as I was looking at pictures of a Dilophosaurus, they kind of look the same with like the ridges on their head or
on the
skull.
But they don't have those things that come out.
That's right. So yeah, the Dilophosaurus had the ridges on their head.
Yeah.
But they did not have the neck frills that popped out like this thing did. It did not spit any type of toxic goo that it. I mean, I don't know why they would even think that was why we needed that. And not, it wasn't small.
There is animals that spit.
Right, but it didn't do that.
Dramatic effect.
This was not a small dinosaur. This thing was about 20 feet long could have totally destroyed the movie version. Whereas, which is weird, because on the opposite, the velociraptors in the film are way larger than what actual velociraptors.
Right. Yeah.
The Utah raptors are more like the velociraptors we saw in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, so definitely, this is kind of weird. But yeah, I always thought that was weird. Like, I even remember as a kid... hearing that the Dilophosaurus, you know, first I heard that the Dilophosaurus was a fake, it was a dinosaur created just for the film, but then like, oh, no, this thing existed, but boy, it's completely different than what's depicted in the film.
A toy shot out water.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He had a button pressed.
Oh, that's nice. All right, speaking of toys, maybe this is more for Brandon and myself than it is Chris. Did you have any of the toys growing up, Brandon?
T-Rex, 1993. The 1993 version that was brown.
Yep.
It had the roar, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't think it walked, but it had the realistic skin.
Yeah, like a softer
like
rubber
a softer
type skin.
Rubber skin, yeah.
I don't think all those larger dinosaurs, you could actually peel, like, take off, like, a section of, like, their skin, exposed ribs.
That was, like, the other movies. Like, I don't think that was part of the first one.
I think it was.
Maybe you're right.
Maybe. I'll have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure.
I remember being at Books A Million and getting a Velociraptor plush.
Mm.
Yeah, I still have it today. It has its little talons and everything.
Well, one of the things
one of them, though.
Yeah, one of the things that irritated me about the merchandise, especially the action figures and the dinosaurs, is that all the dinosaurs were branded with a JP logo,
mm-hmm.
like right on like the leg. And I'm like, this looks so stupid. But, of course, they did that. To stop, you know, counterfeiting, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so it's just like, well, if he doesn't have the JP, because you know,
Jurassic Park,
that's right. So, because you know, well, counterfeiters don't know how to make that logo,
we
can make a mold of a whole new dinosaur and try to sell it on the street in the flea market, but whoa, JP, that's beyond our technology, ridiculous.
The Chinese one had CP,
CP,
yeah, China Park,
yeah. Anyway, any other topics y'all want to discuss for Jurassic Park?
You guys go ahead. Let me think on it for just a second.
All right. Brandon, any other topics? I mean, of course, you can't mention Jurassic Park without mentioning John Williams' iconic music. I mean, it's fantastic. I'm not going to hum any of it. Yeah. Well, Brandon will for you.
Yeah, I love the music, though.
Yeah.
That was awesome. But do you remember the Happy... Did they had a Happy Meal toys? Because I kind of... vaguely remember like a
I think I think there were.
Well, I know McDonald's had a promotion that you could like drastic size your meal and get like a cup and.
Well, did it not have like a T-Rex head and a straw went through its mouth or something like that? I just kind of remember something.
I remember. That's the thing. Like, I had zero Jurassic Park merchandise as a kid. I think I had like one of those things with like a pencil topper of like the Dilophosaurus, and I had a T-shirt that I talked about on here. It was a white shirt with some black print on it, and I ended up spilling like red Kool-Aid all over it and ruining my shirt. But other than that, I had no Jurassic Park merchandise.
Well,
no.
They had the fry boxes and the cups, the design,
but no toys.
No toys in this one.
I don't. That's crazy to me.
Now I had. I actually had some of the first comics.
Oh, the Topps comics?
Topps comics. Some of the earliest comics that Topps did, the sports card company. Mm. They got into the business with Bram Stoker's Dracula about a year before. I remember that. But I had some of those first ones when they did an adaptation of the movie, and then, of course, continued it. Mm. And everything. So it was they weren't bad.
Mm, not bad. That's cool. Fun little comic book history from Chris here, as always.
Always.
Yeah. So I guess before we move on, I mean, this is going to be a real short episode this week, but that's fine. We've already discussed Jurassic Park last year, and I believe in what, November, I believe. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's fine. We're just you know, giving some tribute to our winner, the 2024 90 Today March Madness tournament winner. So Steven Spielberg, got to talk about him real quick. I mean, there's not really so much that we can talk about when it comes to the actual film Jurassic Park and Steven Spielberg, but maybe what's some of your favorite Steven Spielberg films?
We'd actually already talked about one, Schindler's List.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you've got to. Yeah. Incredible, incredible.
I might try to watch it while I'm on.
Definitely not a feel-good movie, but it's something I think everyone should see at least once. I mean, I got to go all the way back to Jaws. Mm. Original. You know, I mean, Steven Spielberg invented the summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to give him all kinds of...
That's my favorite.
I love it.
All kinds of props for that.
Right. Yeah, I have to say my favorite Spielberg film is the movie poster, the framed movie poster that I'm looking at right now in my dining room area. E.T., the extraterrestrial. Love that movie. I get emotional at the end of it all the time. When E.T., you know, points at Elliot's chest and says, "I'll be right here." And, oh, man.
And for any Spielberg fan, go way back to pre-Jaws. The first movie he ever directed was a made-for-TV movie called Duel.
The Duel, yeah.
Which is a great movie. You could see, I mean, you could see the beginnings of what he would become in that movie. Mm. Just some of the shots are just quintessential Spielberg, and you could see it then. And this was like 1973, I think, 74, when that movie first came on TV. Mm. Really good movie, very suspenseful. But like I said, you could definitely see the elements there.
Yeah. Brandon?
I'd like to say E.T. for the same reasons you said.
Really?
Yeah.
Very, it just gets you right in the feels.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to say Jurassic Park's probably number two, real close number two.
I've rode the movie.
No, I have to say that. I have to say maybe no. Raiders of the Lost Ark would be my second favorite Spielberg film. Jurassic Park being number three. Yeah,
my favorite overall though has got to be Close Encounters.
Hmm. Yeah, that's another one that I get emotional with when all the beings come out of the ship at the end.
Never seen it.
That's great.
Remember, saw it in the theater and just. As a young kid, just blown away.
This means something.
That's what started really my fascination with UFOs and aliens, and that's continued to this day.
And, you know, there's so many great movies that he's produced, had his hand in some way or the other. Like my favorite movie of all time, Back to the Future, is produced by Steven Spielberg. And if it weren't for Steven Spielberg, we wouldn't have gotten Michael J. Fox in this film. It would have been Eric Stoltz, and we may not even be talking about it right now.
That seems weird to think about.
Yeah. Goonies. He didn't direct it. Richard Donner directed it, but, I mean, it was produced by Spielberg.
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist, which some people still to this day claim that Tobe Hooper did not direct this movie, that it was Spielberg, but you have lots of cast members and Spielberg himself claiming that it's not the case and that it was just hearsay from a magazine article. But yeah,
wasn't that movie cursed?
It may have been.
I could talk a whole episode's worth about that movie. Oh, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I rewatched it because I don't know if I mentioned it on here, but I know Brandon, you know. I don't know, Chris, if you know, but this past October, I basically put an invite to anybody. 8 o'clock, my place, every night during the month of October, I'm going to watch a horror movie. Here's a list of what I'm watching. You can pick your day. I'm going to be here. Don't even call me. Just show up. Doors unlocked. And so Poltergeist is one of those movies. And I hadn't seen Poltergeist in years. But I know it was a good movie. That's why I was on the list. I mean, I don't want to crap. But I forgot how incredible Poltergeist is.
It is.
It starts out weird. Not too many horror films start out with the Star Spangled Banner. But it does.
Why does it start with this?
Because they're watching TV.
Oh, it used to end that way, right?
But just a phenomenal film. But yeah, I mean, Spielberg, just how he has changed Hollywood and honestly changed some of our childhoods, it's ridiculous. And we're probably better off for him being in the business.
And on another topic, Poltergeist, another example, some great early practical effects before computers. Scene with the guy, of course...
I've heard about them using real skeletons and stuff like
that. They did do that.
That's crazy.
Spoiler alert for a 42-year-old movie with a scene where the guy's ripping his face off, where he imagines he's ripping his face off. That was pretty effective. It was very effective.
And it's like, it's one of those movies when you think it ends, it ain't over.
So like, I remember seeing Carrie, at the very end, that jump scare where it reaches up over the ground.
Oh, that still gets me. I don't like watching Carrie because of it. But I have to say, I kind of wish Spielberg would find that old 80s magic again. I think a lot of people were expecting Ready Player One to be like his return to that 80s feel, and it was not.
It wasn't. I enjoyed it okay, but it's nothing I really thought about much after I saw it,
I didn't like the book. I didn't like the movie, and I sure as hell didn't like the changes. I mean, it was just an 80s eye candy. That's all it was. And if you talk to anybody who really liked that movie, I liked watching. I liked seeing all the Easter eggs in the movie. I'm like, did you like the movie? You're telling me like background stuff that you like. Did you like the movie? But I liked seeing the Iron Giant. Like, that's not the movie.
I loved the I loved the references. Because I'm an 80s child, 70s and 80s child.
Did you like the movie?
But the movie wasn't that great.
See, Chris knows how to answer my questions. Well, what else do you guys want to discuss about Jurassic Park here? Anything else that we've left out? We talk about merchandise, Spielberg, John Williams.
How about we talk about maybe some of the differences?
Okay,
best-selling novel and the
as I mentioned, Michael Crichton, the Jurassic Park, a novel was published in 1990, and Hollywood was going bonkers for it, trying to get the rights to it. So there are differences from the book to the film, of course. But here's some of the glaring ones that I found on an article online. So the dinosaurs, unlike in the film, they're coming to the park, just kind of see how it is. Like, and is this going to be a good business for them to start as a destination vacation? Well, in the book, before anybody shows up, or like Alan Grant and the lawyer and Ian Malcolm, before they show up, dinosaurs have already made it to the mainland. There has already been an instance where velociraptors have attacked somebody. So that part has already been established way early on into the novel. Chaos has already ensued. Alrighty. Let's see. Lex and Tim, their personalities are kind of switched. Lex, of course, is the older sister, Tim being the younger brother. In the book, however, Lex is younger. She's kind of a tomboy, loves baseball, and she's a little bit more naive. She's a little bit more of a
Of course, she's younger, so she's going to be kind of whiny. Doesn't understand what's really going on. Tim, being older, he's the tech geek, whereas Lex is in the book. He's a big dinosaur fan, so that's, you know, that's that stays the same. And he's more level-headed, makes the better decisions. So there's no real reason as to why Steven Spielberg changed that up at all. I don't know if you guys can read my notes here. If you want to take that, or if you want to keep on reading my handwriting here.
Oh, and I see you've got on here that Hammond is actually the real villain in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, it said that he's more naive in the film. Like, you know, he gives a reason as to, you know, why he wanted to start the park, and he thinks that, like, it's going to be a great... He wanted to make the park, you know, affordable for everybody to come to, whether for rich or poor, and gives this whole spiel about a flea circus that he started and all this crap. But in the book, however, he's more money hungry, and even though we've already established that there's been raptor attacks early on before anybody's even shown up to inspect the park, and he's had multiple warnings that, hey, this might not be a good idea, he just kind of dismisses it to, well, it's just our security systems, we gotta do better with it. But yeah, he's all about the money in this way. He wants to keep on trying to push through all these warnings and through the red flags, and says, "Yeah, I'm, you know, give me that dollar bill, because this is going to be a good investment."
I think Spielberg probably changed that because he didn't want Hammond in the movie to be unlikable.
Yeah,
which he would have been, because, you know, Sir Richard Attenborough played him.
I mean, you can't have the guy who went to go on and play Santa Claus.
He was a legendary director in his own right. Mm. So I guess Spielberg, maybe felt out of respect. Mm. He didn't want people to hate Hammond.
Yeah, don't be hating Hammond. What you got there, Brandon?
They had two T-Rexes to deal with.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, juvenile responsible for...
Good, you're reading my shorthand. Yeah. So there's a lot of the juvenile. Apparently, I didn't finish that at all. So the juvenile T Rex was responsible for breaking out of the enclosure, the T Rex enclosure, the first time around. It doesn't really say that he did; it just kind of assumes it. And apparently, there's a more iconic scene in the book that when they're flying off in the helicopter to escape the island, they see the juvenile T-Rex roaring at them. Of course, they don't mention a younger T-Rex until the second film.
Yeah, the second film is where you see them go to the mainland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we got some stuff that they borrowed here and there. They said that the book was way more gory than the film, and it focused more on horror than it does action.
Yeah, so you've got very descriptive dismemberments there.
Yeah, so there was a lot of that. And the dinosaur deaths are way worse than what they are in the film. I mean, you might get them seen shot with a dart or something. But yeah, there's apparently one scene where somebody shoots rocket launchers into some velociraptors.
Whoa. Wow. It's pretty vivid.
Oh, yeah. Chris, if you can read that, take that one away.
In the book, it looks like the dinos were actually smarter, and the raptors actually snuck aboard a cargo ship and escaped to the mainland. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's how they get to the mainland. They saw that they was on there. And apparently the raptors are smart enough that when they do escape to the mainland, they survive off of a chicken farm.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. They're clever girls, you know.
Brandon, I'm sure
Jurassic Park was destroyed.
Yeah.
And Costa Rican government napalms the entire island, making dinosaurs extinct. Wow.
Which was probably the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy. You have two forms of people playing God. You have John Hammond playing God, and then you have the Costa Rican government also playing God as well.
It makes you wonder if Crichton at first never planned on doing a sequel.
Well,
wipe them all out.
Well, that goes on to this. So you have several characters that ended up surviving, and some that died that didn't happen in the film. So Dennis Nedry and Muldoon actually survive in the novel.
Wow.
Dr. Wu, who's just in the film for just a little bit, but ends up having a larger role in the Jurassic World stuff. So Dr. Wu and Hammond are actually eaten by compies in this novel.
Oh, wow.
Ian Malcolm actually dies in the first film. However, Michael Crichton actually later retcons this because he is the main character in his Lost World novel. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's an explanation for this, or maybe Lost World takes place in an alternate universe. Yeah. I don't know.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, so. See, I knew that years ago, because I think somebody at KB Toys actually told me this right before Last World came out. And the last thing that I have written here, the lawyer, Gennaro, is actually much more heroic than he was in the film, whereas...
He got eaten in the toilet.
Yeah, he's more worried about, oh man, we're gonna make a killing with this part. And when the T-Rex starts terrorizing everybody at that one little section, he runs out and hides into an outhouse. But in the book here,
they said when you gotta go, you gotta go.
You gotta go, you gotta go. But yeah, in the book, he's actually one of the people that tries to turn the power back on into the park. And to get to where he needs to be, he has to get into a raptor nest and ends up like sucker punching a raptor to try to get the power turned back on.
So basically, Spielberg wanted Hammond to be more likable, and he didn't care if people hated the lawyer.
I mean, who likes a lawyer?
There you go. And
so. Yeah, I just thought those were some interesting tidbits. Makes me want to go and read the book. I think somebody let me borrow their paperback copy years ago, and I don't think I ever gave that
Can
back.
Can you tell them your horror book story? There are you found the book signed by Michael.
Our area in Southeast Tennessee has a few used bookstore chains called McKay's, and I was in the fiction section of the store, and I found a copy of Jurassic Park and Jurassic World put into one large format hardback. I looked inside of it. It had a price tag of $20, and I looked inside of it, and on the front flap, it was actually signed by Michael Crichton. And I did not buy this book, and the reason why I didn't buy the book is that if I'm going to buy a signed version of Jurassic Park, I want it to be the original... Just Jurassic Park. Oh, I know. And
this story physically hurts me.
I know. So I didn't buy it. So like now, whenever I'm over there again and I see a hardback copy of Jurassic Park, which is not often, I do check it to see if it's been signed or not. But yeah, I didn't
Never
buy
again.
I'll tell you what though, I would rather have Jurassic Park action figures over a signed copy of the book any given day of the week.
No, yeah. I wouldn't.
You just don't come across them.
I collect signed books, so well, I would.
If I find one, I'll let you know. Well, guys, anything else that we want to discuss about Jurassic Park? Brandon, anything else that you can think of that we've left out?
No.
Chris?
I think we've covered it between, the podcast where it actually won. We talked a lot about it at the end. I think we pretty much covered it. I'm sure, like you said, there are more hardcore fans out there, I'm sure, that are probably like, well, why didn't they mention this? Why didn't they bring this up?
It's because we're not hardcore fans like this. I mean, we're casual JP fans, I think. I will ask this. Maybe you can say your favorite dinosaur from the film and then your actual favorite dinosaur ever. We'll go around the table. Actually, we'll start with Chris because it was like Brandon's already defeated with an answer.
No, I know my favorite dinosaur.
Okay.
But it would remain the same.
Okay, what is it?
Velociraptor. I love them.
Okay.
I love those guys.
I'll be honest with you. I talked about them before. I love the Brontosaurus.
Yep.
In the movie and the actual dinosaur, Brontosaurus. They're gentle giants.
Right.
And I like that.
I'm going to go with probably the generic answer here. My favorite dinosaur in the film is T-Rex. It's just very threatening, and I love the sound that they were able to create for the roar of the T-Rex.
How were they able to do that?
I think there's some elephants in there. Oh, man, I remember reading about that years ago. I know some elephants are used in some other wildlife. And apparently there's like to make like some of the other noises, they use a lot of animals and heat noises.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You get some interesting noises out of that.
But when it comes to like my favorite dinosaur, I don't think I have one.
Really?
I think I mentioned it on our Jurassic Park episode. If I were to pick one, it would be whatever's like a cute cuddly dinosaur. Nothing that's gonna eat me. Maybe like, a little baby dinosaur that I could carry around with me. And people be like, I go like a Renaissance fan and be like, oh,
what you got there?
And that's why I like the that's why I like the brontosaurs. Like they're big, but they're gentle. You know, I could ride around on.
They're the giraffes of the Jurassic world.
Yeah.
Well, does that about wrap it up for everybody?
Sounds good to me. Yeah.
Well, all right. Take it away, Brandon.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you'd like to listen to an old episode where we talk about TGIF, SNCC, Saturday morning cartoons, and the Wendy Super Bar, and much more, subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, Overcast, Spotify, Breaker, and Radio Republic. And now you can find us on YouTube Music.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So you can find me at The90s Today on Instagram and X. Where can they find you at, James?
They can find me on Instagram at JamesWoo10 and on X as
Dinosaur Hunter.
Yeah, that's right. At James _Woo10. Chris?
I'm on Facebook. My profile picture's changed. Now it's me and my grandson with our glasses on looking up at the sky during the eclipse.
Okay.
A little selfie I took.
So. James, you want to sign us out?
Actually, I'll let Chris do it since we got a special guest this week.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of 90s Today. Join us next time.
And until next time.
Hey, James, wake up. The show's over.
Oh, yeah.